Let's read together Deuteronomy chapter 3. In this chapter, we have a continuation of the first address of Moses to the children of Israel on the plains of Moab before the conquest of Canaan. In this part of the sermon or address, Moses further reviewed Israel's conquest of Transjordan, as well as Israel's distribution of Transjordan to the 2.5 tribes of Reuben, Gad, and a half tribe of Manasseh. You understand what we mean by Transjordan, right? We mean the other side of Jordan, namely the east side of Jordan. Let's begin by reading the first 11 verses. Deuteronomy chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. Then we turned and went up the road to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said to me, "Do not fear him, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. You shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon." So the Lord our God also delivered into our hands Og, king of Bashan, with all his people, and we attacked him until he had no survivors remaining. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we did not take from them, 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these cities were fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many rural towns. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as booty for ourselves. And at that time we took the land from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites, who were on this side of the Jordan, from the river Arnon to Mount Hermon. The Sidonians call Hermon Surion, and the Amorites call it Seir. All the cities of the plain, all Gilead, and all Bashan, as far as Salcah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. For only Og of Bashan remained of the remnant of the giants. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. Is it not in Rabbah of the people of Ammon? 9 cubits in its length, and 4 cubits its width, according to the standard cubit. Let's begin our study of this chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 3, with some background notes. If Og, king of Bashan, was living today, I'm sure some pro basketball team in the NBA would be giving him a contract, even if they had to teach him how to play the game. Verse 11 says that his bed, or possibly burial sarcophagus, was 13.5 feet long and 6 feet wide. So Og was a big man for sure. Og was of the remnant of the Rephaim, or giant people, who lived in that area. And we see from verse 8 that Og, king of Bashan, was one of the two kings of the Amorites who were on the east side of the Jordan River, or Transjordan. The other Transjordan king was Sihon, king of Heshbon. We read about Israel's overwhelming defeat of Sihon, king of the Amorites, in the second half of chapter 2. Now here in the first half of Deuteronomy chapter 3, we have the overwhelming defeat of Og, king of Bashan, king of the Amorites. And that brings us then to our first doctrinal point for Deuteronomy chapter 3. So doctrinal teaching point number 1, Moses reviewed Israel's conquest of Transjordan. Moses reviewed Israel's conquest of Transjordan. The Amorite kingdom of Sihon, king of Heshbon, went from the Arnon River north of Moab to the Jabbok River that runs into the Jordan River about halfway between the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee. The Amorite kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, went from the Jabbok River all the way north to Mount Hermon. It included a good portion of Gilead as well as Bashan, and was also called the region of Argob, verse 4. We see in verses 4 and 5 that the children of Israel captured 60 cities with high walls, as well as a great many unwalled towns. Wow! There was a lot of fighting even before they crossed over the Jordan River and conquered Jericho. By the way, archaeology confirms the biblical record here of many towns and walled cities in the Transjordan at this time. Now, the biggest problem for many believers when they read this chapter, as well as when they read the whole book of Joshua, is why God condoned the utter destruction of the Amorites and the Canaanites, including the killing of women and children. Verse 6, Let's read that verse once again. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. In answer to a difficult question like this, we must start with a basic teaching about God in the Bible. That is, God is love. 1 John 4:8. Do we believe what God says about himself, or don't we? And in Genesis chapter 18, verse 25, we have a foundational truth about God's dealings with mankind. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Genesis 18, 25. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Now, we may not understand everything God is doing, and it may even look at times like God is unfair or even cruel, but we don't have the larger picture. A dentist may look cruel when he's pulling out a tooth. A surgeon may look cruel when he's removing a tumor. But we can be sure that God always does the right thing. Now, after being convinced of the basic answers, that God is love and always does the right thing, there are other answers as well that can be given to this question of why God condoned all the killing at the time of the conquest. God knew that if these pagan people, with all their idolatry and immorality, were not rooted out, they would pollute God's people with their pagan ways, because little Amorites and Canaanites grow up to be big Amorites and Canaanites. We know from the book of Judges that Israel did not obey the Lord completely in this matter of clearing out the enemy. And sure enough, it led to Israel's downfall. And remember, God gave the Amorites and the Canaanites plenty of time to change their ways, but they would not. God told Abraham in Genesis chapter 15 and verse 16 that his descendants would be enslaved in Egypt for 400 years before they conquered Canaan, because the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet complete. Genesis 15, verse 16. So God was patient and long-suffering with the Amorites and Canaanites. So there are answers to the question of why God directed his people to take no prisoners when it came to the conquest of pagan lands. And one more point to ponder. In view of the overall teaching of the Bible and the way God deals with the souls of men, would you rather be an Amorite or Canaanite baby killed in Israel's conquest, or grow up to be a pagan Amorite or Canaanite worshiping foreign gods and thus be separated from God forever? I know what option I would choose. Well, that was all under doctrinal point number one. Moses reviewed Israel's conquest of Transjordan. Doctrinal point number two. Moses reviewed Israel's distribution of Transjordan. Moses reviewed Israel's distribution of Transjordan. Verses 12 through 22. Deuteronomy chapter 3, beginning now with verse 12. And this land, which we possessed at that time, from Aroer, which is by the river Arnon, and half the mountains of Gilead and its cities, I gave to the Reubenites and the Gadites. The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the king of Og, I gave to the half-tribe of Manasseh. All the region of Argob, with all Bashan, was called the land of the giants. Jair, the son of Manasseh, took all the region of Argob, as far as the border of the Geshurites and the Maacathites, and called Bashan after his own name, the towns of Jair. Also I gave Gilead to Machir. And to the Reubenites and the Gadites I gave from Gilead as far as the river Arnon, the middle of the river as the border, as far as the river Jabbok, the border of the people of Ammon. The plain also with the Jordan as the border, from Kinnereth as far as the east side of the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, below the slopes of Pisgah. Then I commanded you at that time, saying, the Lord your God has given you this land to possess. All you men of valor shall cross over armed before your brethren, the children of Israel. But your wives, your little ones, and your livestock, I know that you have much livestock, shall stay in your cities which I have given you, until the Lord has given rest to your brethren as to you, and they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them beyond the Jordan. Then each of you may return to his possession which I have given you. And I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, Your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings. So will the Lord do to all the kingdoms through which you pass. You must not fear them, for the Lord your God himself fights for you. Here we have Moses' review of the distribution of the land of the Transjordan to the 2.5 tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh, who settled on the east side of the Jordan River. Now you can read the full account of this transaction in Numbers chapter 32. God wanted all 12 tribes to cross the Jordan and dwell on the west side, but the 2.5 tribes wanted to live on the east side because the land was good for grazing and raising livestock. They agreed to help the other tribes fight the battles, but once the conquest was over, they would return to their families and farms on the east side of the Jordan River. God allowed this arrangement, and the Transjordan boundaries between the 2.5 tribes are given here in these verses, with Reuben in the south, Gad in the middle, and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the north. Kinnereth, in verse 17, is another name for the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of the Arabah, or Salt Sea, of course, is the Dead Sea. So here in the second half of Deuteronomy, chapter 3, we have the distribution of the land for the 2.5 tribes. Moses reviewed Israel's distribution of Transjordan. Now we come to practical application for Deuteronomy, chapter 3. Don't say please when God says no. Don't say please when God says no. Verses 23 through 29, Deuteronomy chapter 3, beginning now with verse 23. Then I pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do anything like your works and your mighty deeds? I pray, let me cross over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, those pleasant mountains and Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me on your account and would not listen to me. So the Lord said to me, enough of that. Speak no more to me of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah and lift your eyes toward the west, the north, the south, and the east. Behold it with your eyes, for you shall not cross over this Jordan. But command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you will see. So we stayed in the valley opposite Beth Peor. Normally we tell children to say please when they want something. But when we say no, we do not like it when they say, oh please, pretty please. That's what Moses actually did here. Back in Numbers chapter 20, God had told Moses that he would see the promised land from a distance, but he could not go into the land because of his disobedience when he struck the rock for water twice in anger. Perhaps Moses thought that God would change his mind if Moses pleaded and said, please, as it were. But God said, enough of that. Speak no more to me of this matter. Now, do you see the application for us? Has God said no to you in some area of your life? Maybe even in some area of Christian service? Are you willing to take no for an answer? Or are you pleading with God to change his mind? Don't say please when God says no.